Welcome to the Our Work Matters podcast of the Florida Developmental Disabilities Council. If you are an individual with an intellectual or developmental disability, their family member or caregiver in Florida, this podcast is the place for you. The FDDC's purpose is to promote policies and best practices for the IDD community through education, advocacy, and partnerships. In this podcast, we'll be sharing ways you can get involved by highlighting our partner projects, legislative platforms, and advocacy opportunities. So come learn more and join our community.
Welcome, I'm Chris Reeve and I'm your host. And we thought we'd start out our podcast series with an overview of what the council is and what it does. And I know that the FDDC is not something that everybody is terribly familiar with. So I wanted to make sure that we had that lay of the land before we dive into some of our future episodes. And I really want to welcome Valerie Breen, who is the Executive Director of the Florida Developmental Disabilities Council. And she is going to give us that lay of the land. So welcome, Valerie. I'm so glad you're here with us.
Thanks, Chris. It's really a pleasure to do this podcast with you. I thought I would start out giving a little bit of a personal story and giving a framework of why, you know, we exist and what we do here and why I'm involved and why our staff are so involved in the work that we do. In, I'll take us way back to 1923 when my father was born. He was the youngest of 11 children. And his mom died when he was three, so he was raised by his older sisters. One of those sisters was born with Down syndrome, and another sister's child was born with hip dysplasia. And during those times, you know, really in the late 40s, early 50s, there really wasn't a lot of understanding of either Down syndrome or any type of physical disabilities. But in 1955, I was born with hip dysplasia as well. And at that time, nobody knew that it was genetic. But what that involved was that I was in a hospital for 6 months. Then I was in a cast for over a year. And then I was in braces for another year and a half. So it was almost at the age of three that I started to walk. The difference was, is that I was able to walk and my cousin who was born with hip dysplasia was not able to walk. But the one thing that we grew up with, no matter what, and I give this little background in my father's family, is that we were together frequently. And we had family gatherings. And the one thing that was a commitment back in the 50s with children with disabilities in our family is everyone was cared for at home. There was never a thought about any other option than educating your child at home, making sure that their needs were met, even though there really wasn't any regulations or support for school systems at that time. Mm-hmm. In fact, my mom, at an early age for me, when I was five, decided to run for the school board as the first woman to be elected to the school board because she wanted to push for access for children to be able to access gyms, et cetera. So my family was very involved back then. And I ended up working since I was 15 years old with individuals with disabilities because I always felt very grateful that I did not have a permanent disability, but wanted to pave the way for so many other children who were placed in nursing homes, which was the first place that I worked when I was 16 because of their medical complications, and subsequently individuals placed in group homes and in institutions. So I bring this up because we had a family philosophy. My father was doing assistive technology before that term even existed. He modified all of my equipment to accommodate my braces, you know, from my high chair to my workstations to everything. And so families were very resilient in the 40s and 50s. It really wasn't until families were told early on, you know, their children, many families were told when children were born with disabilities, especially the very significant ones, that they will not improve and maybe it's better that they not live at home. In 1963, so I'm taking us back to then, the Mental Retardation Facilities Construction Act was established under John F. Kennedy. And that was the first movement to start addressing individuals with developmental disabilities. In 1965, Medicaid was established. And Medicaid, everybody thinks of Medicaid as being a healthcare plan through the state that are for individuals that are impoverished. But it also was a very significant healthcare plan for children with developmental disabilities. And that plan eventually got expanded to provide more and more services for individuals, with a whole movement of being able to get children out of institutions and be able to have them live at home and in their communities. It was 1967. So you've got 63, we've got the act, which is now called the Developmental Disabilities and Bill of Rights Act. But in 63, it was called Mental Retardation Constructions Act. And 65 is Medicaid. And in 1967, state-run institutions were the first and often only option for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. They were moved there and they were often forgotten. So it's in the 1970s that there started to be this big movement of investment in children's education, investment in getting these children out of institutions. And that is when our council was established, along with councils across the country. So we were established in Florida in 1971. So we started at the beginning of the whole deinstitutionalization phase. Our council has had a very, very large movement and involvement across the country in terms of access to education and getting individuals moved into their community, which really takes us to today. So you can see we've had over a 50-year history of being a spokesperson and representative of individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities and their families in the state of Florida. We are an entity that is governor appointed. So the governor appoints every single person to sit in a seat on our council, which is prescribed to have 15 individuals with developmental disabilities and family members, a state agency leader representatives from the key agencies under the executive branch that serve or represent people with intellectual and developmental disabilities, and then a couple of organizations. Why that's important is because we have direct access to the executive branch here in the state of Florida. And under the DD Act, we are protected. We're able to advocate and educate without having any pushback on us. So we're able to bring up issues that sometimes state agencies cannot necessarily address. So oftentimes we can really have the ear of the executive branch on key issues that are important to our population. So what's unique about us across the country and why I think it's important for people to know about us is not only have we had a long history of being around, number two is that we have played the major vehicle as the voice for families on policies that are being established or thought about, services that are being delivered or not being delivered that should be delivered, building the ability of the state and organizations to better serve or recognize our population. So we've had a lot of influence in that through the years. But also here at the council, here in Florida, we are We have 10 extremely talented staff, many who are made up of either siblings, they have a sibling with a developmental disability, they're a parent, they're a grandparent, and they have dedicated their careers to really improving the lives and education, research, involvement that will positively impact this population that lives in Florida. And right now we anticipate that there's nearly 500,000 people currently living with developmental disabilities. And that does not include the family members and caregivers that provide those supports to them. So that's a little bit about us, Chris, and why we're unique.
Well, and it's interesting because I think that, you know, I've been here for a little while now, and I don't think I've ever heard that story about your background. And I really appreciate that. We certainly know that this is a field that has a lot of people like myself, whose sister was born in 1953, and the doctors said put her in an institution, and my parents didn't, and figured out everything on their own. And she graduated from high school and got an associate's degree. And nobody really understood what the nature of her developmental disability was until much later. And so I think, you know, the changes that people, the environment that people are living in now is certainly changed over the last 50, 70 years.
What I think too is interesting, Chris, as you bring that up, is that no one really expected that individuals, especially like with Down syndrome, which was one, probably one of the first really recognized intellectual disability groups, mm-hmm. no one thought that they would live very, very long. Like my cousin Yvonne lived till she was 32. And so her mom could have a life beyond Yvonne. But now we have this whole group of family caregivers who are aging in place with their family member with developmental disability. So we have people with DD living into their 60s and their families are in their 80s. And it's a whole different culture about, wow, you know, we had no idea we were going to be in this place at this time. And I think the significance of what we're going to face in the future for all of us and for the councils is, how do we prevent that slippery slope of people and individuals starting to move back into those institutional type settings, you know, over time? Mm-hmm. So those are going to be a lot of challenges for us as families and individuals as we move forward. But you're right. I mean, there weren't a lot of choices and there are a lot more now. But I'll tell you, it has been because these families 50 years ago that are still living were fierce advocates to make change. And, you know, the council is just what I call is the wind beneath their wings to help, you know, continue that movement forward.
And I think that's a big thing. And it's one of the reasons that I was excited to, when you asked me to start this podcast, because I grew up in Florida. I've lived here on and off throughout my life. My family is in Florida. My sister's in Florida. But I really wouldn't have known that the FDDC existed or the work that you do or the supports that you can provide in terms of helping to advocate and make real change that makes a difference for our family members. So I think that's
it's a privilege to work here and be in this role. And it's like the culmination of all my years. I've been at this about 50 years, you know, and starting with just my own family story. But I've seen a lot of change, a lot of positive change for families, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good.
So how can we help listeners, the people who are listening to this? What does the FDDC have and how can they get involved?
Well, one thing I said here is, what do we do and why do we do what we do, right? Mm-hmm. And then we'll talk a little bit about how people can really get involved, because what I do want people to understand about us is that every 5 years, we must develop a comprehensive state plan, which describes what areas we're going to focus on and how we're going to get the work done. And this plan takes about 2 years for us to develop, with doing a whole comprehensive needs assessment and statewide input from family members, individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities, agencies, and others involved in the community. We really like input. We like people to be able to tell us what they think is most important. And we'll be launching our new plan. We're in the midst of starting to work on this next state plan, even though we're in the middle of the one we're doing. But we're gathering that information now because we'll have to start a new state plan in October of 2026. But one of the things that I want to say is that the main pillars for this organization are really in the areas of education, advocacy, and partnerships. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that. And then I'll talk to our listeners about ways that they can be involved. When I talk about education, and keep in mind, I gave this little history of 50 years ago and where we are today, because education has always been key. If there's anything, if we study where money goes to in states, okay, there are two major pots of money across the country. One is the investment in education, and one is the investment in Medicaid. Those are two major investments. What does education mean to us is we educate families at a very young age about how to be the best advocates they possibly can be throughout their entire educational system. When an individual moves out of the educational system and starts to live on their own, wants to go to work, wants to go to school, and then as they get in the workforce, and then as they age. Because everything we do on the education realm depends on where money's invested, how policies are set up, how those educational dollars are spent. So we want, at our level, families to be well-educated in how to advocate through all those systems that they're going to face with their loved one. So the things that we offer here at the Council are our partners in policymaking, education. We educate our individuals with developmental disabilities how to advocate for themselves. We bring together a Developmental Disabilities Awareness Day every single year, and we prepare people with materials, platforms, talking points to keep their needs, their issues in front of the people that make the difference, which are our legislators, our policymakers. Also, we provide educational materials on our website and publications, whether it's research, whether it's helpful things to use, because we want people to have the most up-to-date information and the most meaningful things to them that have been used by other families and other individuals across the state. Another pillar for us, no matter what, is what we call advocacy. And advocacy is getting those key people to pay attention to us while they make policies, while they make decisions, while they change their systems, change the way they fund things, whether they're going to directly affect our people or indirectly affect our population. We look at it both federally and at the state level. And the reason we do that is because our group of people are tucked into a major disability movement. I mean, people are very familiar with the Americans with Disabilities Act. People may not be so familiar with the Olmstead decision, which allowed people to actually be moved out of institutions and into the communities and hold states responsible for funding services to keep people at home. Those are some of the major legislations. The Individual Disabilities and Education Act, those are all very valuable federal policies. Right now, people are still being paid subminimum wage. There's movement going on at the federal level to stop people from being paid below minimum wage if they're working just because they have a disability and be able to have equal access to jobs like everyone else with equal pay. So all those things happen at a federal level. At a state level, we pay attention to all those same things that are going on for people. But also we develop the vehicle here at the council for people to tell their stories and their experiences, which is called Our Care Matters. And you'll see that on our website. These are videos from across the state. These are individuals and families telling why their care matters the most to them and what they need in order to remain at home and access a quality of life. So those are some of the things we do on the advocacy level. And then last but not least are partnerships. And what we mean by partnerships, I mean, part of partnerships is how our council is configured, because just having state agencies at the table, hearing the stories and issues faced by families and individuals in this decision-making group has been really invaluable to everyone because it's a learning environment. But we actually get about $4.5 million a year from the federal government, which then we use to directly affect policies or services. We know that no matter what, data drives services. And we are given money to provide the seed money to whether it's universities, organizations, researchers to begin to study some of the significant and key issues that are facing people with developmental disabilities today. We are currently in the midst of looking at and coming up with tools for quality case management, access to services, also looking at training first responders, developing curriculums, things that we know and give the seed money to organizations to develop those things and then help get those instituted into actual policy, law, getting them distributed, having them recognized and used by our communities. Also, one of the things is that every decision and project that we do, we involve families and individuals with DD because we find their input extremely valuable. So right now we probably have about 17 projects that we're currently working on through the council under our current state plan. And they're really focused on home and community-based, keeping people in their home, aging caregivers and all the impact of what's going on for our aging communities. Also, we're looking at all the access to services components. And also, we do a lot with our self-advocacy leadership. But some of the couple of examples I want to give, and then I will talk about how to get involved. For the last 10 years, I'll give a couple of examples. One was in transportation. We have used seed money to develop pilot voucher programs to improve access to transportation for people with developmental disabilities that want to work, want to access community activities. So we've actually worked with public transportation organizations and have had some significant success. And with our seed money combined with other money, they're actually providing door-to-door services 24/7 that are safe and accessible to people with developmental disabilities. We did a lot of research, we've done a lot of advocacy, and this year we're going to continue to do more because now we want to see sustained funding to keep some of those specialty programs going. All the data, all the research we've done have gotten us to date and gets us at the table to talk about those needs. And lastly, we have been committed to employment of people with the most significant disabilities for years. And we were instrumental with the governor years ago in establishing the Employment First Act and keeping our Employment First Collaborative going. Today, we have the Employment First act as part of the governor's initiative to keep going with our partners to continue to collect data and improve employment services for people that includes people with developmental disabilities. None of this is really, sexy or immediate. The types of things that the council does is all that meat and potato stuff behind the scenes to keep pushing, keep things top of mind. And so I really count on all of our research and our council and our staff to come up with that data, that support, that we just keep pushing forward. And a lot of the work that we do lasts another 10 years in terms of pushing for sustainability. So why do people want to be part of us? I would encourage people, and I listed here, if you are a person with a developmental disability, if you are a family member caring for or living with someone with a disability, if you know of someone who lives with a disability, or are possibly serving someone with a disability, you want to be connected to us. You're going to learn from us in our social media, in our monthly news, what's all going on, what events we have, what research projects are out there, what materials you can use, what educational programs are available. Because what we really try to do is stay ahead of the game, stay top of mind on what's going on. You can count on us for good, solid information. And it's a place that you'll want to be connected and join us for our events. Because we can't tell you in all my career, this is what I will say, everything that I do, I never learned from books. I learned from people. I learned from experiences. I learned from listening. I learned from participating. And I think in the movement of more awareness in our communities, and, you know, we see people with developmental disabilities in films and working and participating, that the more we can learn and the more we can be involved, the more we can collectively make a difference and improve people's lives and make sure that they always have choice and they don't go back to having less choice and having to live in environments that were never their choice at all. And for our families, it was never their choice, but there weren't any other options. So together, I think we can keep this movement going. So that's what I would say in all of this.
And I think that's great. I think, you know, what I'm hearing you say is that everything that we do at the council is fed by the DD community, by families, caregivers, as well as the service supports. And we have the opportunity to advocate in the legislature with the council itself in terms of the priorities of what is important to our DD community to keep moving forward, which I think is phenomenal.
Yeah, and I've always said, at least since I've been here, that we really wanted to build our brand as the trusted resource, especially for families and individuals, and also all those serving our populations. So, yes, I would agree with you 100%. Good awesome. Summary.
So, thank you, Val. That was incredibly amazing information. It was very informative. And over the next episodes, we're going to have the opportunity to talk to project providers who are working on some of this research that supports our different projects, which I think listeners will find really useful. And we'll also have a variety of ways that they can get involved in their own community, in the state community, with us. And so we would love for our listeners to get involved with the council. And you can start by visiting our website at fddc.org, and we'll make sure that that link and the link to the Our Cares Matters, which Valerie talked about, those videos are also in the show notes so that you'll be able to access those. And those are really powerful voices from the DD community that I think are so so incredible. So thank you so much for joining us for our first episode of the Our Work Matters podcast. And we are so glad that you are part of our community.
Thanks, Chris.